All right, good morning again. We're talking about this morning, living in the presence. And looking at the book of Exodus in chapter 33, a rather interesting story concerning Moses and God. And as we look at this passage, what we will have to do is sort of rework our, or forget what we already know about Israel. Because what's happening here in this passage is sort of defining that nation. In other words, sometimes what we're guilty of is looking at the Bible anachronistically. That's just a big word for saying, I'm standing way over here at the end of the Bible and I'm looking back at the Old Testament trying to read into it something that isn't there yet. Okay? And so when we're talking about Moses and his people here, they're at a stage in the development of the nation that is nothing like what will come later. All right, they've yet to have the law. They don't have anything resembling what we understand as the Bible yet. This is all brand new to them, right? And so they're in a world in which there were many gods. The people in various places believed in different deities. Slavery was common for smaller countries around you. You would just simply, I have a new building project to do. That country is weak and small. Let's get them and they will do our work. And so you would do that and plunder their homes and their houses. And this was just a way of life. Life was brutal. It was tough. If everything wasn't perfect, guess what happens next year? Your whole village dies because you didn't do something right in the way that you planted your food, or a particular disease comes in and you don't keep clean and something happens and you spread it to everyone, and guess what? Everyone dies. It is a harsh reality in that world. But we're talking about living in the presence, all right? I mean, living in the presence, and what I mean is living in the presence of God and what that looks like, and what does that mean for us? How does this passage apply to us at all? Because we're so far removed from this time in history. And so what I'm going to ask you to do today, again, is to place yourself in the situation of Moses and his people. And so as we look at this passage, I'm going to remind you about some things that they don't know and that maybe that they know at this point. All right? And so we'll think about that as we look at it. By the way, the name Israel, It means literally to struggle with God. I mean, sometimes we don't think about that. We just think Israel just means God's people, right? But Israel means to struggle with God. And so if you're going to read about Israel's story, what do you think you're going to find? A struggle with God. Now, isn't that what we experience too? You know, we experience all sorts of things. Sometimes we wonder, God, how can you let this happen? Why, whenever I pray, you didn't make this thing come true for me? Why is it that, you know, every day that it's tough, that life is hard, and I struggle with you, I struggle with the answers I receive from you? It is a constant struggle to walk and to be with God and to follow His will. And the Israelites were finding this out. Moses is struggling with what's going on here in this passage of the Exodus, and he's led his people, and he's struggling with understanding what exactly does God want. Because I don't know. All I know is he said what? I'm the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Go over there and let my people go. Okay, now what? Right? I mean, so there's sort of, he doesn't know. He doesn't understand. He doesn't have any other information that we have. He doesn't know anything about if God is compassionate. He doesn't know if God is merciful. He doesn't understand anything else about God. He knows what God has said to do, and he's done some of that. That's it. Think about it that way. Think about that's the extent of your knowledge of who this God is. And you've seen him do some miraculous things at this point. You've seen some crazy stuff happen. Like you said, you're not going to believe what I just did with this stick when I hit the water. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are going on that, you know, would have overwhelmed most people. Moses is able to handle it. And then Moses goes up to Mount Sinai. He receives the Ten Commandments. Think about this. He doesn't know anything about this God. He essentially just heard of him, right? I know he's descended from the Israelites, but he grew up in Egypt. He knows that the slave people there had a God that they worshipped and all that, but he doesn't meet him until he's in the desert there at the burning bush, and God gives him very little information. And so Moses is there now after the Exodus, goes up the mountain, and God says, I'm going to tell you what I want. Remember, he's struggling with what? God, what do you want? He gets what God wants, has it on the tablets. On his way down, guess what? The people have done something. They built a golden calf, right? It was, in fact, was one of the gods of Egypt, okay? Again, the world that they live in, guess what? That was normal life. Why? Because evidently, in fact, he said, look, this is the God that brought you out of Egypt. The golden calf, the one that we had been worshiping in Egypt. Why? Because we're still kind of in Egypt, all right? And so they're thinking about it in this way. And Aaron is there too, Moses' brother, right? And he allows this all this stuff to take place. However, God informed him, you better hurry up because they built this thing. The very thing that God writes on there and says, this is what I want. What does Moses do? He breaks them, right? So now I've got it written down, what God wants. Moses is angry, throws them on the ground and breaks them. Now what? We're back to square one again, right? God, what do you want? What am I supposed to do? And you see this struggle that Israel and the people of God have with him throughout their entire life. 3,000 people die because of the problem there with the golden calf. So it doesn't mean that there weren't significant consequences because they did something wrong. Ignorance was essentially not an excuse. And it's, in fact, it still works that way with the law today, doesn't it? I mean, how many of you ever went hunting and it wasn't open yet, right? And you happened to shoot a deer, right? Would you say, well, I didn't know it wasn't time. Or do they say, oh, well, never mind, you can take your deer and go home, right? No. What happens? Ignorance is not an excuse. You're in trouble, right? Or I didn't know what the speed limit was on this particular road. Well, maybe you ought to do some research before you come driving through our neighborhood, right? And so ignorance is not an excuse. You're in trouble, right? And the same thing is true with God. And so Moses is struggling. His people, he says, are stiff-necked. In other words, they are stubborn. They are full of themselves. They whine. They complain. They grumble. They're aggravating. He doesn't know what to do with them. He goes to God, and God says, move out of the way. I'll smite them and get rid of them. You can start over with different people because I understand. Those people are tough, you know. And this is what Moses is dealing with. Then he's going to God, and he's, God, what do you want from me? What am I supposed to do? I know nothing, right? So I need you to teach me. These five verses that we're looking at today, I think, are defining for the nation of Israel. I think that these are the five defining verses that makes Israel what it is in its relationship with God. So I want you to think about that and think about what that means for us today and dealing with the presence of God. Look at verse 12 and 13. Moses said to the Lord, look, you have told me, lead this people up, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You said, I know you by name, and you will have also found favor in my sight. Now, if I indeed have found favor in your sight, please teach me your ways, and I will know you, and find favor in your sight. Now, consider that this nation is your people. Think about what Moses is saying. Teach me something. Teach me about you. I mean, what's the last time that we've done that to God? God, show me something about you. God, I need to learn about you. Not just what somebody else has told me, but I need to know about you. Show me who you are. Teach me. Moses pled with God. Lord, I don't know much about you. You know, when we begin to have a relationship with God, guess what we need to do next? Tell me something about yourself, right? Whenever you're introduced to someone new, what do you do? Do you simply just learn their name and walk away? You know, if you plan on being their friend, you kind of need to know what? Something about them, right? You know, you walk away, what did that? Oh, that was Jimmy. What does he do? I don't know. It's just Jimmy. He's just my friend, you know? That's a funny thing to say, right? We would never say, yeah, I've been knowing Jimmy for years. What do you know about him? He's Jimmy. That's all we know, right? And so for some of us, that's our relationship with God too, isn't it? It's like, who is he, God? Well, tell me about God. I mean, somebody asked you today, well, you know, tell me something about God. What would you say? Well, he's just kind of like God. You know what I mean? You know God. He's just God, you know? Is that how we're supposed to pass on information about someone? No. It's not how we're supposed to pass information on about someone. We're supposed to know something about the individual. And so Moses is trying to lead these people, and he doesn't know anything about God. He's struggling with all of this. He's like, I need to be taught by you. I need to know what you want. I need to know what you expect. Again, they live in a world in which the ideas about God changed depending on your geography. So if I move from this place to that place, the ideas about God and worship and all the things that I'm supposed to do changed. That was the world they lived in. So I move over here. I mean, did we now have to worship God in this name? They're struggling with this identity. Remember, these people are coming out of slavery. I'm not talking about what Abraham did before. I'm talking about what the society had degraded into at the time of Moses. These people have no clue. They have no idea. They know nothing. They've been here for hundreds of years, living under the oppression of the Pharaoh. So Moses said, you told me to lead them, but who will go with me? In other words, send somebody with me. In fact, Moses has already asked this question before. This isn't the first time he's asked this question. He asked this question before, and you know what God tells him? I'll send an angel. I'll send a different divine being to be your guide. All right, whenever you go, whenever you move out in your presence, you're going to follow this messenger, this angel. That's what you're going to do. And Moses, for Moses, guess what? Not good enough. Not good enough. So Moses maybe is thinking in his mind, right, is this just like the rest of the gods? I mean, think about it for a minute. If I move from this place to here, why can't God go with me? Is he confined? Is he stuck in this place? Is he just like the ideas of the gods in the area? You see, not only that, but what are your intentions? I mean, what do you intend? I don't understand. What are your intentions with me? You say you want a relationship with me. What are your intentions, right? The guy shows up to pick up the daughter. Father says what? What are your intentions, right? What are you trying to get at? How far are you planning on this relationship going, right? Because I got news for you. There's a line here. Right? What are your intentions? And so here, Moses is asking God, what are your intentions? I need to know. You want a relationship with me, but I don't know what that means. I mean, does that mean I have to sacrifice a particular animal? Do I do something on a certain day? What do I do? Again, there's still no law. They have no idea of anything. So Moses is struggling with all of this. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've felt unsure about life before. Haven't you felt unsure? It's like, where do I need to go? Where should I step? How should I proceed? It's okay, guess what, to ask God. Moses says, I don't know what you want. And maybe that's you today. Maybe you're sitting here today and you says, I don't know what you want. I don't know where you want me to go. I don't know what you expect from me. What I need is for you to teach me. I need you, Lord, to teach me. Show me your intentions. Show me something about yourself. Because in this world that we live in, there are many ideas about gods. In his day, that's what it was. Today, guess what? There are many ideas about God and who he is and what he wants and what he expects and all these things. We ought to be asking God, teach me about you. The next truth within this passage, beginning of verse 14, he says, essentially, to go with me. He then replied, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. If your presence does not go, Moses responded to him, don't make us go up from here. Now think about that. Think about what Moses is saying here. If your presence doesn't go with us, don't make us go anywhere from here. We don't want to go anywhere. We want to stay here. Why? Because we have to be in your presence. I mean, think about that for a minute. God, go with me. And God says, I will go. He tells them, I will go with you. It's not going to be an angel. It's not going to be a messenger. It's not going to be anybody else. My presence, me, who I am, I will go with you. He answers Moses in a question in a way that was unexpected in that world. And this God would go with them across national boundaries and stay with them. You know, he could have been struggling with the idea that God would pass on to him someone else again to lead him, as he said earlier, with an angel. But here he gives him something else. The people of Moses, again, had already built the golden calf. They're already doing all these other things. But God tells Moses, my presence will go with you. You see, Moses needed this to be true. He really did. He needed it to be true because he knows what it's like when his presence wasn't there. He'd experienced that before. And he knew what it was like to be in the presence of God. He'd been to the top of Mount Sinai. He understood what it was like. And he says, God, if you're expecting us to go do something over there and it's not with you and you're not with us, please don't send us. Let us stay here in your presence rather than going somewhere else where we're not going to be there with you. Think about that. Think about what he's saying. We can't be without you in your presence. We don't want to live that way. Moses wants to know, will you continue to be with us? Now think about why Moses may be saying this too. Look at the disaster of a nation that's already just started. I mean, they've already messed up. People have already died for their sins and the way that they've essentially committed idolatry in the middle of the desert. They're not listening. They grumble. They complain. They're hungry. God gives them food. They're thirsty. God gives them water. But guess what happens when the food comes? It's not the right kind of food. What about when the water comes? It's not often enough. How about I give you some different kinds of meat? What about quail? Oh, quail, they're great. And after the second day, I'm tired of this. I want something else. They just complained, they whined, they grumbled, they did all of these things. And so Moses is saying to God, God, will you still be with us, please? We need you. We want to be in your presence. We want this relationship with you. Will you continue to be our God, is really what he's saying. You know, are you sending me out to do that? Are you going to, if not, just leave us here and let us die in the desert, right? What's the point of going on? If I can't be in your presence, if I can't live with you, if I can't be with you, this is what we need. We need to be in the presence of God. He's saying, God, stay with us. When's the last time that you've pled with God, saying, God, be in, please go with us. Please, as we do things as a church or as a family, God, teach me and go with me. Stay with us. We need to be in your presence. And lastly, he says in this passage, to make them different. He says in verse 16 and 17, how will it be known that I and your people have found favor in your sight unless you go with us? I and your people will be distinguished by this from all the other people in the face of the earth. The Lord answered Moses, I will do this very thing you have asked, for you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name. Moses tells them, make me different. Make us different. Make us stand out. Do something so that we can be distinguished from the rest of the world. And what's that distinguishing thing? What does he tell him? The presence of God. It's not all the other stuff that's going to come later. It's not just about the way that they dressed or just their food laws and all the other things that go along with all of these things. Those things happened, but they happened for a different reason. Here, we're seeing that just this intimate conversation between Moses and God, Moses says, what's going to distinguish us from the rest of the world is God's presence, is the presence of Yahweh with his people. I would submit to you today that that would still distinguish God's people from the rest of the world, right? It's God's presence among his people. It's only the presence of Yahweh that distinguishes that group from any other in the world. In fact, it is their only hope. It is their only hope. There is no other way. The people of God can't be the people of God without the presence of God. Now, you can try to do that. We can put on a show. We can do all sorts of things to pretend that we are the people of God. But unless the presence of God is there, in fact, we are not the people of God. The reality is we must have his presence with us and what we do and as we go and as we're being taught. And if that's not true, then we're no different than anybody else in the world. You see, Moses is saying, I don't want to be like that. I want to be in your presence. I want to be there. I want to be taught by you. I want you to go with us. And I want to be different because you're here with me, because I'm different because of your presence in my life. Religion can't replace the presence. And there's nothing that you can do. No law, no circumstance, no service, no cathedral, no person, no book, no nothing that will ever take the place of that. It is the presence of God that makes someone different, that makes people stand out as the people of God. Again, notice this. They still don't have this. You know what they have? The presence of God. And Moses said, God, please don't let me go without having this. I need that presence in my life. We need it. If not, we are nothing. We could have ceremonies, we could have rituals, we could follow the law completely that we'll later get. But we still can't be the people of God without the presence of God. We can try it, but it won't work. And so God tells Moses, guess what? I will do this very thing that you ask. Think about how significant this is. Moses asks that God would remain with them and be present with them. And God says, yes, I will. I will be there with you. And he's telling this to a group of people who have committed idolatry on him, who have grumbled against him, who have complained against him, who have committed all sorts of grievous sins. Those of us who come to God, I believe, still today, come to God with a repentant heart saying, God, we need your presence. I believe that God will reside with them. God told Moses, I will do everything that you ask. Again, what an amazing answer. Folks, the God of yesterday is the God of today. He has not changed. He still desires to have a relationship with us. If we want to know more about him, we ought to plead with him and pray with him and ask him, Lord, teach me. Lord, go with me. Lord, make me different. Plead with him to make you sacred, to make you holy, to say that the called out ones are seeking after him and they want to make him known. That is what the people of God are supposed to be. From the very beginning, when God says, I'm going to distinguish you as a nation, as a people, what he told them was that I'm going to bless you in order that you might in turn be a blessing to the rest of the world. That was the deal that was made there. See, whenever God comes and he saves you, he changes you, he radically alters your life, you were supposed to go out into the world and actually make change for other people and continue to pour out that blessing onto others. You are to be the conduit through which God can do that throughout the world. As a church, if we expect to continue to be here into the future, what we must have is the presence of God in our homes, in our families, within our church. It's not good enough just to walk in the door and hope that God is here. You see, being with God and having his presence there is not about that. It's not about walking just into a little holy spot somewhere. It's about you and your relationship with God. And even then, with Moses, it was not about a holy spot. It was about his personal relationship with God. And you notice this. God as a holy God could kill Moses if he wanted to. But Moses asks him questions. He thinks he doesn't understand. God deals with him and he treats him with respect and as a human being, and God loves him and he honors his requests because Moses was serious and because he meant it. You see, whenever we come to God in that way, whenever we say, God, I really mean it. I want to be taught by you. I want to know that your presence is here. I want to be made different from the rest of the world. When people look at me, they will say, I know that they have a relationship with God because I see his presence in their life. That ought to be what shows us apart. Jesus says in the New Testament that they shall know you by your fruits, right? In other words, whenever I look at their life, I can see that God's presence is there. It is active. It is different. There's something going on that stands them out. It makes them different from everybody else. When they look across the people at the workplace, when they look at you, do they say, something is different in their life? Why is it different? What is that thing that's different? I don't know, but they're standing out for some reason, and I'm trying to understand what that is because I want that in my life too. It ought to be that way with us as the people of God. As we think about in just a moment, taking part in the Lord's Supper, the idea within the Old Testament of having a covenant meal was to say that I covenant with God, that God, I agree with you in the things that you say about me, and I agree with you in the things that you say about who you are. And I covenant with you to live my life by that standard. And as we carry that forward into the New Testament, I believe that Jesus was essentially doing the same thing. When he sat there at the Last Supper, and he called out and he said, this is my body, and he said, this is my blood. You see, when we take part in this, what we're saying is that we agree with what Jesus has said. That we agree with him, that we believe him, that we trust him, and that we desire and want his presence in our lives. That's what we're saying. And what's special about taking part in the Lord's Supper is that it should only be for those who are called out as God's people. In other words, those who have a relationship with God, who are saved, and who are baptized. Why? Because God does something special and different for those who are saved and baptized, who are called into his presence, who are being obedient as followers in him. That's the point of saying that there's something different about them and that fellowship that they have with one another and that fellowship that they have with me. And so I pray that as we lead into this invitation that you would begin to think about what God has done in your life and the ways that you can turn over more areas to him, things that you can pray about and do. Would you stand and pray with me?